Chapter 6. Hearing of people who are around seeking after truth. I have never seen a permanent specimen. I think he had never lived. But I have seen several entirely sincere people who thought they were permanent seekers after truth. They sought diligently, persistently, carefully, cautiously, profoundly, with perfect honesty and nicely adjusted judgment until they believed that without doubt or question they had found the truth. That was the end of the search. The man spent the rest of his life hunting up shingles wherewith to protect his truth from the weather. If he was seeking after political truth, he found it in one or another of the 100 political gospels which govern men in the earth. If he was seeking after the only true religion, he found it in one or another of the 3,000 that are on the market. In any case, when he found the truth, he sought no further, but from that day forth, with his soldering iron in one hand, and his bludgeon in the other, he tinkered its leaks and reasoned with objectors. There have been innumerable temporary seekers of truth. Have you ever heard of a permanent one? In the very nature of man, such a person is impossible. However, to drop back to the text, training. All training is one form or another of outside influence, and association is the largest part of it. A man is never anything but what his outside influences have made him. They train him downward, or they train him upward, but they train him. They are at work upon him all the time. Why? Then, if he happen by the accidents of life to be evilly placed, there is no help for him. According to your notions, he must train downward. No help for him? No help for this chameleon? It is a mistake. It is in his chameleonship that his greatest good fortune lies. He has only to change his habitat, his associations. But the impulse to do it must come from the outside. He cannot originate it himself, with that purpose in view. Sometimes a very small and accidental thing can furnish him the initiatory impulse, and start him on a new road, with a new idea. The chance remark of a sweetheart, "I hear that you are a coward," may water a seed that shall sprout and bloom and flourish, and ended in producing a surprising fruitage in the fields of war. The history of man is full of such accidents. The accident of a broken leg brought a profane and ribald soldier under religious influences, and furnished him a new ideal. From that accident sprang the order of the Jesuits, and it has been shaking thrones, changing policies, and doing other tremendous work for 200 years, and will go on. The chance reading of a book, or of a paragraph in a newspaper, can start a man on a new track, and make him renounce his old associations, and seek new ones that are in sympathy with his new ideal. And the result, for that man, can be an entire change of his way of life. Why? Are you hinting at a scheme of procedure? Not a new one, an old one. Old as mankind. Why? What is it? Merely the laying of traps for people. Traps baited with initiatory impulses toward high ideals. It is what the tract distributor does. It is what the missionary does. It is what governments ought to do. Why? Don't they? In one way they do, in another they don't. They separate the smallpox patients from the healthy people, but in dealing with crime they put the healthy into the pest house along with the sick. That is to say, they put the beginners in with the confirmed criminals. This would be well if man were naturally inclined to good, but he isn't, and so association makes the beginners worse than they were when they went into captivity. It is putting a very severe punishment upon the comparatively innocent at times. They hang a man, which is a trifling punishment. This breaks the hearts of his family, which is a heavy one. They comfortably jail and feed a wife beater, and leave his innocent wife and family to starve. Why? Do you believe in the doctrine that man is equipped with an intuitive perception of good and evil? Adam hadn't it. Why? But has man acquired it since? No. I think he has no intuitions of any kind. He gets all his ideas, all his impressions, from the outside. I keep repeating this, in the hope that I may impress it upon you, that you will be interested to observe and examine for yourself, and see whether it is true or false. Why? Where did you get your own aggravating notions? From the outside. I did not invent them. They are gathered from 1,000 unknown sources. Mainly unconsciously gathered. Why? Don't you believe that God could make an inherently honest man? Yes, I know he could. I also know that he never did make one. Why? A wiser observer than you has recorded the fact that an honest man's the noblest work of God. He didn't record a fact, he recorded a falsity. It is windy, and sounds well, but it is not true. God makes a man with honest and dishonest possibilities in him and stops there. The man's associations develop the possibilities the one said or the other. The result is accordingly an honest man or a dishonest one. Why? And the honest one is not entitled to, praise? No. How often must I tell you that? He is not the architect of his honesty. Why? Now then, I will ask you, where there is any sense in training people to lead virtuous lives. What is gained by it? The man himself gets large advantages out of it, and that is the main thing to him. He is not a peril to his neighbors, he is not a damage to them, and so they get an advantage out of his virtues. That is the main thing to them. It can make this life comparatively comfortable to the parties concerned. The neglect of this training can make this life a constant peril and distress to the parties concerned. Why? You have said that training is everything, that training is the man himself, for it makes him what he is. I said training and another thing. Let that other thing pass, for the moment. What were you going to say? Why? We have an old servant. She has been with us 22 years. Her service used to be faultless, but now she has become very forgetful. We are all fond of her. We all recognize that she cannot help the infirmity which age has brought her. The rest of the family do not scold her for her remissnesses, but at times I can't seem to control myself. Don't I try? I do try. Now then, when I was ready to dress this morning, no clean clothes had been put out. I lost my temper. I lose it easiest and quickest in the early morning. I rang, and immediately began to warn myself not to show temper, and to be careful and speak gently. I safeguarded myself most carefully. I even chose the very word I would use. Who have forgotten the clean clothes, Jane? When she appeared in the door, I opened my mouth to say that phrase, and out of it, moved by an instant surge of passion which I was not expecting, and hadn't time to put under control, came the hot rebuke, "You've forgotten them again. You say a man always does the thing which will best please his interior master." Whence came the impulse, to make careful preparation, to save the girl the humiliation of a rebuke? Did that come from the master, who is always primarily concerned about himself? Unquestionably. There is no other source for any impulse. Secondarily, you made preparation to save the girl, but primarily its object was to save yourself, by contenting the master. Why? How do you mean? Has any member of the family ever implored you to watch your temper, and not fly out at the girl? Why? Yes. My mother. You love her? Why? More than that. You would always do anything in your power to please her? Why? It is a delight to me to do anything to please her. Why? You would do it for pay, solely for profit. What profit would you expect, and certainly receive from the investment? Why? Personally? None. To please her is enough. Oh, MM. It appears, then, that your object, primarily, wasn't to save the girl a humiliation, but to please your mother. It also appears that to please your mother gives you a strong pleasure. Is not that the profit which you get out of the investment? Isn't that the real profits and first profit? Why? MM. Oh, well? Go on. Oh. MM. In all transactions, the interior master looks to it that you get the first profit. Otherwise there is no transaction. Why? MM. Well then, if I was so anxious to get that profit, and so intent upon it, why did I throw it away by losing my temper? Oh. MM. In order to get another profit which suddenly superseded it in value. Why? MM. Where was it? Oh. MM. Ambushed behind your born temperament, and waiting for a chance. Your native warm temper suddenly jumped to the front, and for the moment its influence was more powerful than your mother's, and abolished it. In that instance you were eager to flash out a hot rebuke and enjoy it. You did enjoy it, didn't you? Why? MM. For a quarter of a second. Yes, I did. Oh. MM. Very well, it is as I have said. The thing which will give you the most pleasure, the most satisfaction, in any moment or fraction of a moment, is the thing you will always do. You must content the master's latest whim, whatever it may be. Why? MM. But when the tears came into the old servant's eyes, I could have cut my hand off for what I had done. Oh. MM. Right. You had humiliated yourself. You see, you had given yourself pain. Nothing is of first importance to a man except results which damage him, or profit him, all the rest is secondary. Your master was displeased with you, although you had obeyed him. He required a prompt repentance. You obeyed again. You had to. There is never any escape from his commands. He is a hard master and fickle. He changes his mind in the fraction of a second. But you must be ready to obey, and you will obey, always. If he requires repentance, you content him, you will always furnish it. He must be nursed, petted, coddled, and kept contented, let the terms be what they may. Why? MM. Training. Oh, what's the use of it? Didn't I, and didn't my mother try to train me up to where I would no longer fly out at that girl? Oh. MM. Have you never managed to keep back a scolding? Why? MM. Oh, certainly many times. Oh. MM. More times this year than last? Why? MM. Yes, a good many more. Oh. MM. More times last year than the year before? Why? MM. Yes. Oh. MM. There is a large improvement, then, in the 2 years? Why? MM. Yes, undoubtedly. Oh. MM. Then your question is answered. You see, there is use in training. Keep on. Keeping faithfully on. You are doing well. Why? MM. Will my reform reach perfection? Oh. MM. It will. Up to your limit. Why? MM. My limit? What do you mean by that? Oh. MM. You remember that you said, that I said training was everything. I corrected you, and said reigning and another thing. That other thing is temperament, that is, the disposition you were born with. You can't eradicate your disposition nor any rag of it, you can only put a pressure on it, and keep it down and quiet. You have a warm temper? Why? MM. Yes. Oh. MM. You will never get rid of it, but by watching it, you can keep it down nearly all the time. Its presence is your limit. Your reform will never quite reach perfection, for your temper will beat you now and then, but you come near enough. You have made valuable progress, and can make more. There is use in training. Immense use. Presently you will reach a new stage of development, then your progress will be easier, will proceed on a simpler basis, anyway. Why? MM. Explain. Oh. MM. You keep back your scoldings now. To please yourself by pleasing your mother, Presently a mere triumphing over your temper will delight your vanity, and confer a more delicious pleasure and satisfaction upon you than even the approbation of your mother confers upon you now. You will then labor for yourself directly, and at first hand, not by the roundabout way through your mother. It simplifies the matter, and it also strengthens the impulse. Why? Ah, dear. But I shan't ever reach the point where I will spare the girl for her sake primarily, not mine. Why, yes. In heaven. Why? After a reflective pause, temperament. Well, I see one must allow for temperament. It is a large factor, sure enough. My mother is thoughtful, and not hot-tempered. When I was dressed I went to her room, she was not there. I called, she answered from the bathroom. I heard the water running. I inquired. She answered, without temper, that Jane had forgotten her bath, and she was preparing it herself. I offered to ring, but she said, no, don't do that. It would only distress her to be confronted with her lapse, and would be a rebuke. She doesn't deserve that. She is not to blame for the tricks her memory. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.